everybody, grab your goat. It is time for the Witches Movie Coven, the very last one of 2023. So get something to drink, make some popcorn, and let's talk movies. Today, we're actually talking a TV series, an Amazon TV series, Good Omens. I guess I just discovered it, and yay. Thank you, Richard Lael. Richard Lael, do you want to give anybody who perhaps doesn't know what it is? We'll do all our introduction. We do introductions now. There's really loud typing here, though.
Whatever.
Okay, we'll just do it. Hi, I am Patty. I am one of your hosts. You might know me from The Witching Hour, my regular podcast, or Ghost Adventures, or my work with the Ghost Finders, or my school, or anything else. But I am thrilled to be here with these four amazing people. Richard Lael.
I am Richard Lael. I'm known as the Gentleman Psychic. I am here in New Orleans, not to be confused with Old Orleans, which is actually a place. I am the Gentleman Psychic, and I am, of course, known as a Diabolist, and I support my team quite very well, even if they are bumbling idiots. And we'll move on to, I guess, Heather is there next. Heather.
Hi, I'm Heather Green. I am an author as well as a editor at Llewellyn Worldwide and a freelance journalist that covers the occult and tarot and witchcraft and all the things in the media. And I wrote a book on witchcraft in film, and I just tried to look for my copy and it seems to have walked off. So
Courtney usually has one with her, but she doesn't.
She has not. I have one somewhere, but maybe a little devil took it, perhaps. Possible. And I am here to enjoy my last show for 2023. Looking forward to it.
Yes. Courtney.
That's me. I'm back. I missed you guys all last week, but I'm Courtney. You may know me from Scared and Alone, which is actually what I am currently. As you can see, it's a different background right now, not my normal horrifying, not adultery. I am currently dog sitting and the house that I'm dog sitting in, so appropriate for this show, it feels like, is a parsonage built in the 1700s to a church, which is right next door. So I haven't lit on fire yet, which is great, but I have felt a little spooky in here. It's my first time alone in this house. And just as we were, you know, getting ready to come on, I heard a door slam and I thought, I'm making that up because I'm just a little on edge. And then the dogs that I'm watching started barking. So I know that they heard it too. So wish me luck because I'm here all night.
Don't look behind you, Courtney. Don't look behind you.
There's like a big pair of gloves behind you, Courtney. They look like someone probably used them to murder another person.
I was just going to say, those are for murder. Yeah.
No gloves. I'm Jason Mankey. I'm a murder conspiracist, apparently. And I'm the author of several books. This is the one that's currently in my hand, The Horned God of the Witches. And it seems appropriate because it seems like the devil is on our mind tonight. Yeah. There we go.
Anyway, yes, Good Omens. It's an Amazon series I just discovered. But for those who may not know, can we get a still unbiased explanation?
An unbiased explanation. Yeah. So originally we were going to do The Omen. And it's a cult classic. The Omen is about the rise of the Antichrist, and the Antichrist comes to Earth, and all of this hell and destruction is released. And in the Omen, he is the son of the ambassador, the American ambassador to some European country. I can't remember now exactly which. But I started watching it, and I thought, I don't feel like watching all of that. That it was very harsh. It was very harsh. So I thought that we should instead watch Good Omens and watch the negative energy get thwarted. And also it's this lovely romantic comedy between an angel and a demon. And it starts out 6,000 years ago, according to the Bible. And it's after the Garden of Eden, where the serpent Crawley has just given Eve the apple of knowledge, the fruit of knowledge, and Aziraphale, the angel who was set to guard the paradise with a flaming sword, felt like that they should absolutely have a flaming sword because she was expecting and they needed it to defend themselves. So he loses the sword, and from that moment, the serpent Crawley changes his name to Crowley because it's much more appealing, and he doesn't want to be associated with that really anymore. And they have this great friendship, and it goes through time, it goes through space, it goes through all of the 1700s and the 1940s and the 1800s we missed. And they get to modern day, which is what, I don't know, 10 years, I don't know how long ago it was. Anyway, they get to modern day, and it is just a few days before the end of the world, a few years rather. Crowley brings the child of Satan to some satanic nuns who are supposed to give this child to the ambassador, the American ambassador to Europe. And they're going to dispose of the other child, and just like the plot of The Omen, but this other couple come in, and there's all kinds of chaos that ensues. It's the baby gets passed around one to another, and the wrong baby gets sent to the ambassador and his wife. And the right baby, which is also the wrong baby because he's also the Antichrist, the other baby ends up by being to this lovely couple in England. And they raise him as their own. But meanwhile, heaven and hell have decided, okay, we're gearing up for this battle. We're going, it's Armageddon. It's the end of the world. It's all about winning. It's all about winning. But Crowley and Aziraphale have decided that they don't really want the end of the world, that they like sushi and the music of Queen and driving a vintage automobile, and they like books and they like people and they like it. And so they have this thought, why don't we watch and observe this child as he grows, and then we can maybe counterbalance each other, and you can be the demon and I can be the angel, and we can maybe neutralize the Antichrist. And like the book, like The Omen, the film that precedes it, a demonic nanny shows up after, of course, the other one is missing. And then the angel is the gardener. And they spend for the next decade talking about counteracting each other, counteracting. And then it is the day of his 12th birthday, when he's supposed to come into his power. He comes into his power, and he's supposed to be having a dog at his 12th birthday. There's supposed to be this hellhound, which, of course, in The Omen was a Rottweiler. And in this one, it's a Great Dane. But the dog doesn't show up. The hellhound does not show up. And both Aziraphale and Crowley go, oh, crap. There's no dog. There's no hellhound. And they realize that they have made a mistake, that they have been for over a decade observing the wrong child, and they have to figure out how did it happen. So it turns out that they discover that the child was switched. They go back to the convent, which is no longer, it's been disbanded, and all of the records have been burned. But in their way through Tadfield, Crowley in his Bentley runs over a woman on a bicycle. And Aziraphale feels so sorry for her, so he miracles there to be a bike rack and miracles this bike to be even better than it was before. And when she gets out, she leaves this book, the nice and accurate prophecies of Agnes Nutter, in the back seat. Agnes Nutter was a witch in the 1600s. She was a witch, and she knew things. And in her prophecies, she had made certain that her family had invested in the apple that one does not eat in 1980. And so they invest in apple products as they come out, and they're very wealthy. And she's here by her ancestors' sort of projection to find and destroy the great beast. And unfortunately for her, she is right in the middle of his presence, so she can't see it. It's like saying, see the United States and standing in New York City. You are in the midst of it, and it's not, but it is, but it's not, but it is, so you can't really see it. And so there is the Witchfinder General, who is in love with a woman of ill repute, who is also a psychic medium, albeit probably a fake one. He comes to Tadfield to find the witch, and this little boy, as he's coming into his powers, everything that he wishes, everything that he dreams, starts coming to reality. They find Atlantis. Aliens pull over the Witchfinder General, whose great burned at stake, not in Salem because it didn't happen in Salem, but burned at stake, great, great antithema devices, great whatever, grandmother. Anyway, so they end up by going through all of this. They find the book, and unfortunately, all of the four riders of the apocalypse, the four horsemen of the apocalypse, come to the forefront. There's famine, there's death, and there is disease, and there is pollution, and they all come through, and they're on their way through London, which unfortunately Crowley had made the way that the I-10 or whatever it was that surrounds London, it became this burning fire ring of hell. It's a ring of hell. And both heaven and hell are both, again, looking forward to Armageddon and destruction and killing. And these two just want, they just want to be together. And then, of course, it turns out that Crowley thinks that Aziraphale has been murdered, and he cries out, "You've killed my best friend!" And so he goes off to save, but Aziraphale has actually been spirited away. He lost his body. He's been spirited away to heaven so that he can prepare for Armageddon. Accidentally, the bookshop burns. The Bentley ends up by catching on fire, but Crowley says, "No, you can make it. You can make it," because demons don't have imagination, but Crowley does have an imagination. And he gets through this burning thing, and they all approach at the Tadfield Airport, which was apparently an old airbase that no longer lands planes. And they get there, and it's the face-off where the Antichrist, who is really just this kid, this 12-year-old kid, who wants his friends, he wants to be loved, and he makes the decision, "No, riders of the apocalypse, you are not my friends. These three who are here, who are my age and have been with me, these are my friends." And then, of course, the demons fight and the angels. So the demon says, "Oh, yeah, we're going to tell your father." He says, "My father wouldn't hurt anybody." "No, your father is Satan," he says. "Your father is the devil." And, of course, the ground shakes and the devil rises. And Crowley and Aziraphale, who have now been spirited there, and long story short, possessions and double... It's, weird, right? Anyway, they get there and they say, "Tell him, you can change it. You're the only one who can. The universe is coming around you. It's coalescing around what you desire. Tell him." And the little boy, Adam Young, who is not Adrian, and he's not Warlock, as the case were in the other one, he says, "No, you are not my father. You never were my father." And in doing so, he saves the end of the world. He's no longer the Antichrist. And so the whole thing has to be put away. And they save the world from the end of the world, from Armageddon, the apocalypse. And in the end, the two are gathered and they say, "Okay, have you heard anything from your side?" "No, not yet." "Have you heard anything from your side?" "Not yet." They're in the park, but it turns out that Aziraphale the angel gets kidnapped by the heavenly forces, and then Crowley gets kidnapped by the demonic forces, and they are dragged to their respective spaces. Now, this is the spoiler. I don't want to tell you, but I will tell you, those of you who haven't seen it, Courtney Buckley, you haven't seen the last
one. You can mute it, Courtney.
So in this one, they are sentenced to death, and the angel Aziraphale is sent into flames of hell to be destroyed forever. And the demon Crowley is sentenced to a bath of holy water, which is going to destroy him forever. And in this, Crowley gets in this bath. They've proven that its power of killing demons, it's effective. And he gets in this bath. And then the archangel Michael comes, and he asks him to spirit, to miracle, a bathing towel. And then Aziraphale, who's been cast into this hell, he says, he screams at them and says, "Oh yeah, now what?" And then they are sent back to Earth because they don't want to be left alone. And then, while there's nobody looking, they change, they have possessed each other's bodies. And they took on each other's punishment because they knew that they could withstand whatever punishment the other side had. And they are so beautiful, and I want an angel. And I love the fact that they also say, the angel says to the demon, I think that this wouldn't have worked out if deep down inside you weren't really a good person. And the demon says, maybe it wouldn't have worked out if deep down inside you were not really a little bit bad at what you do.
It's really cute.
And since we were summing up a 6-hour TV show, that's our show for tonight. Thank you all for coming. We've been the Witches Movie Coven. We'll see you next week.
Okay. Now, I know this probably is not in your book, Heather, but do you have any academics on this or your whole factual Heatherisms?
Oh, I'll give it a try. I've only seen the first episode, so I'm going to limit my commentary because there's lots to be said, I'm sure, if I had seen more. But this has got a stellar cast throughout. You've got a lot of actors that are very recognizable. I think David Tennant, if you can get past the seeing him as the doctor, which is, of course, my own children's favorite doctor, he's fantastic, just my opinion, but he is. And you have Frances McDormand, Benedict Cumberbatch. I'm just naming a few. Nick Offerman, you had to notice his little place. You just have just a string of very recognizable actors, which are great. But again, this is based on, which we've already seen, a book that was written, published in 1990. By Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett. I'm looking at my notes so I don't say anything wrong on dates and stuff. And it's really interesting that it came out then. It was very successful. And you could see in it, you could see Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman in it. And according to what I read is Neil Gaiman came up with the idea, wrote about 5,000 words or so. And then Terry Pratchett called him and they said, let's do this together. And that's how it came about. And they thought about doing a sequel after, but then it never came about. They talked about it a couple times, didn't come. And then, of course, Terry Pratchett passed away in 2015. The one thing that struck me about it, watching the two characters, was, were they based on the actual authors? Can you see a little Terry Pratchett and a little Neil Gaiman? Now, they have actually said yes. To a degree, Neil Gaiman is a little bit of Crowley, and Terry Pratchett is a little bit of Aziraphale. And that struck me when I was watching it. You can see that. But they both wrote, according to Neil Gaiman, they both wrote back and forth on the various characters. So that those are some interesting things. There's been two series. There is going to be a third, which has just been announced recently. And there are a lot of good themes that run through it. Of course, it's queer positive. I think we mentioned they do have a suggested love affair, but that blossoms, and that's always brought about. They bend genders. They do a lot of that, which is some topics that could definitely be addressed, which is something new. The only other thing I wanted to bring up was when the movie came out originally, when the book came out originally, we were in the midst of the satanic panic. So subjects that are about the devil and about Satanism were popular then. Now, this is a British humor, clearly very much British humor. And in the UK, and I wouldn't say it mocks religion at all. That's not what it's doing, in my opinion. I think it's playing with it in a fun kind of way. I think it's the way a cat would play with a toy. It's toying with it. It's turning it around. It's dressing it up in a different way. It's having fun with it. And that's something you would not have found in US television or movies at that period of time. Now, books are a little bit different. You can get away with more in books. They don't work the same way. They're sold differently. They have different ways of production. So you can get, they weren't quite tied to the satanic panic issues, but part of this, the presence of that subject on people's minds would have made this book a little bit more popular. It was popular both in the US and in the UK, but it never would have been made into a TV show probably then in the US, because the US has a very different relationship to religion than the UK, first of all. And second of all, because of the fear of Satan, this show does not do that, does not ride that line. Okay. So you probably would not have seen it made into a TV show then. Now, being made now is very different. Being made successfully now is very different because we love these topics. They've been popular recently. You have things that finally turn and toy with religion in our own television programming. If you think of on the horror scope, Sabrina, the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina does exactly that, where you have the toying with the religion, the turning it around, the twisting it, the challenging it. You're getting that here in a more lighthearted, comedic way. So I think that's its place. If I was to explore something academically, that's probably one of the couple places where I would go. But I find it really fascinating to see that there is a little bit of Neil Gaiman in Crowley and a little bit of Terry Pratchett in Aziraphale. Yeah, I found that to be a very fascinating subject to look, and they have confirmed that. So it's a very British and very Neil Gaiman, as I said, very Terry Pratchett, a whole lot of fun.
Their relationship, to me, that is like the best buddy, the best chemistry, these two. I just fell in love with both of them. Now, did the two authors know each other in real life before they wrote together?
Yes, they met in the early, I think it said they met in the mid-80s. And they had some kind of repertoire. I don't know if they worked together before that or if it was just a professional relationship. And then when I think Neil Gaiman had said that when he wrote the 5,000 words, the initial concept of it, nobody was interested. They all thought he was crazy, whatever. Nah, I'm not. But then I guess Terry Pratchett said, "Hey, I'll work with you on it. Let's make this together." And so that's what makes the character repertoire that you're talking about, Patty, so good, because a single person writing it, yeah, Neil Gaiman's phenomenal, Terry Pratchett's phenomenal, but the interaction, they both have a similar sort of fantastical way, but it's different. The tone is different. And those pieces mix together to create that. And I think that's what makes this brilliant.
I think it's also worth noting that this is Neil Gaiman's first fiction book. And like before that, he'd written some short stories. He had written a book about Duran, I think, for like Scholastic Books or something. But he was primarily a writer of comic books. And this is during the Sandman era, which was at the time the best comic book of its time. Maybe it's the best comic book ever. So I think he probably needed Pratchett too, just to get in the door as a novel writer, because I think comic book writers are often looked down upon. But if you've ever read any of Neil Gaiman's comic strips, you can like when a writer puts it together, he tells the art what the panels are supposed to look like, et cetera, et cetera. And it's as good as a book. You can just read how he writes a comic book.
And I think also just to add to that is I just lost my train of thought. I think you can see that while Pratchett is associated a lot with the Discworld, the witches and all that stuff, Neil Gaiman has a deep fascination to spirituality and religion. And a serious one. It's serious. He takes it seriously. If you have read or watched the American Gods series, it's a brilliant concept, and where he's really diving into something that's, yes, he can do things comedic, he can do things fantastical, but he's fascinated with it. I think that comes along with it as well. And maybe that wasn't, anyway, go ahead.
No. All right. So there's the basics, and now we talk about it. Who wants to go first? Courtney, before you run upstairs.
Yeah, before I run away. Into the so I had, this was on my list of things to watch for a really long time. And I just had never, I hadn't had the time yet to like sit down and delve into it. And I started it tonight. As I always do, I wait to the last minute because ADHD and executive functioning and whatever, I'm a procrastinator. But I'm in like the middle of episode 5. And as soon as we're done here, I'm going to finish it and I'm going to start series 2 because I am in love with them. I just love them. It reminds me of, in a sense, The Good Place, where it's that battle between good and evil with the comedy, a little bit more serious than that, obviously, like more serious subject matter. But there were certain scenes that I like screamed out loud. There was one when it was when they went, one of them was going to be the gardener and one of them was the nanny. And you see the little like Mary Poppins like bird umbrella thing, and I was like, oh. And then it like the camera cuts to him opening the door, and I heard you need a nanny, and I was like, oh my god, I love them, like I just love them. And then at one point they were talking, and he said something about we can just run away and be together, and I was like, oh my god, like, yes, please run away and be together. Like I have never rooted for a couple, I feel like, in one of these movies, other than Clayton the Killing Tree and his wife, as I have for these two. So I'm very excited. I do have some quotes for later on, but before I get into quotes, there is one, the song that he, the lullaby that he sang to him as he says, "Nanny, can you sing me a lullaby?" I was like, yeah, can someone sing me this lullaby every night? It was great. I loved it. I'm so glad I watched it. I can't wait to finish it. I can't wait for season two. I can't wait for the ultimate, like season three when it comes out. I'm a fan. I'm a huge fan. So thank you for changing it to this.
No, it's so much. It's so much better for the new year. It's so much better.
Big time.
Yeah.
But there is, I didn't mean to interrupt, but there is actually some magic behind both The Omen and Good Omens. And I would feel a little bit remiss if I didn't tell you. So partially why the fact that Crowley is Crowley, there is in Crowleyan magic, there is a ritual that they try to summon the Antichrist. Now, he had tried this back in the 30s, and then, of course, there was the rise of a certain dictator. And then in 1945, his prodigy was, oh, goodness, now Jack Parsons. Jack Parsons had friended this other fellow, and I'll tell you who that other fellow was in just a moment, but they wrote back and forth, and Aleister Crowley was saying, no, get rid of him, get rid of him, stop this, don't do this, get rid of him, get rid of him, you don't want to do this. And he would write, and he would say, well, my friend and my wife are now sleeping in the same bed, and I think it's wonderful. And Crowley would say, stop it. And then they started doing this ritual to summon the Antichrist. This was 1945, and Aleister said, no, this is a really, really bad idea. Trust me on this. Stop it. So he and this other fellow, which I'll tell you in a second, went out into the desert with a red-haired woman, and they tried to summon the Antichrist so that he could be the father of the Antichrist and he could have ultimate power. And again, Crowley said, no, this is bad. But it turns out this fellow stole all of his money so that he could start an organization about the sea with ships in Florida that they would send all the way back around to California. This person was also a fiction writer. This person was L. Ron Hubbard. Now, they said that it had failed. However, I will like to say that there is a certain very smelly, very orange fellow who was born in 1946 who praises certain dictators. And that it was exactly 9 months after it had happened. Am I saying that?
I can't believe you've worked Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard into the show, which is one of my favorite little weird points of occult history. And there's like a great story of the two of them where L. Ron Hubbard says, we have this boat we're going to buy in Florida, and I will sail it back to California. And then Crowley's like, no, he's not going to sell the boat in California. He's going to steal the boat, you fool. And Parsons actually then goes to Miami to see if he can get the boat back. L. Ron has already went out to sea, of course, with Parsons' girlfriend. Parsons goes back to his hotel room, casts a magic circle, conjures up a spell to make the ship come back. The ship hits stormy weather and is forced to come back. And Parsons takes control of the boat.
Amazing. Yes.
Yep, and this is all in Good Omens. Not really.
No, man, 46. Careful.
But the fact that Crowley was trying to raise the Antichrist, and then Jack Parsons had tried to raise the Antichrist with L. Ron Hubbard, and then in 1946, there was a certain blonde-haired orange man who was born, and I'm not saying that he is the Antichrist.
But he checks all the boxes.
One Antichrist story, actually. I'm actually very proud of this. I moved into my apartment a few years ago, and for the very first time in my life, I have an apartment of my own where the door is facing the street. And I knew what that meant, and I waited for the day that the people who would come up to my door peddling their religion would knock on my door, because now I have one available. And I had a speech locked and loaded and ready to go when this happened. And so one day it did, and I opened the door, and they said, no, do you have a moment to talk about our Lord and Savior? And I was like, oh, sure, let me have it. They asked me if I believed in Jesus, and I said, I'm a Satanist. Now, we all know what that means, but we also all know what they think that. So that's what I was playing off of. I said, and I'm very like deadpan, very serious Satanist. And they were like, and like visibly recoiled. And they were like, oh, have you always been that way? Well, I like paused and I looked like very serious and I was like, I was raised as the Antichrist, so yeah, I'd say so. They physically jumped back, threw a pamphlet at me, and they were like, this is our website, and then ran off my porch. And my mother, I called very proud to tell my mother about this, and she was like, they're gonna now show up at your house every day to try to save you. So I immediately went on Amazon and I ordered blood capsules so I could put them in my mouth, so that the next time they came to my door, I could just pop one in, open the door, crush the blood capsule, let it dribble down, and be like, oh, you're late for the ritual, come on in. They never came back. But I was really proud of that. So
do you still have the blood capsules?
No, because that was several years ago. I've seen them in the neighborhood. They don't come to my door. But it may have something to do with the fact that I have a Ouija board welcome mat now, so I don't know.
Oh, my God. I love you more every day, Courtney. But I get that a lot.
My wife won't even let me talk to them when they knock on the door.
Oh,
she's like, no, you're just not allowed.
It was the best thing ever. I waited my whole life for that moment, and it paid off. It went exactly like I wanted it to.
Yeah, I used to have a trying to rationalize thing, but they can't hear anything.
They won't.
I had the this is a really smart answer to this, to that. A logical answer, a spiritual answer. Robots.
Yep.
Nope. Next time I'll just get a blood capsule.
It's like literally the best idea. It's the best idea. And I came up with various things, like either like blood capsule, dribbling blood, oh, you're late for the ritual, or like blood capsule. Oh, good. I need some virgin blood because mine didn't work. Come on, whatever. Like, oh, coven's here. You're here for the coven meeting. Come on in. Like anything. It was like a hobby of mine for a solid 6 months to try to come up with all of the things that I could say when they came back that I could use with the blood capsules. But
did they ever come back?
Nope.
No.
They come to my neighborhood, but they don't come to my house.
There's probably like a door-to-door Christian bulletin board, and they're like, no, avoid this house at all costs. And there's your address and a picture of you.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Many years ago, when I was living in Hollywood, before I was on Ghost Adventures, I was a busker, and I would dress up as certain celebrities, and I would entertain. I would go to parties and do events, but I would also, on occasion, I would stand out there, and people would give me money to take my picture. So I had that famous picture that was of me as the devil that was on Ghost Adventures. It was actually started out as a joke. I got dressed up. I was bored. I just went out, and I liked the picture my friend took so much, I put it on my business card, and I was Willy Wonka. I worked with an Edward Scissorhands. Yes, that's the one right there. That's the image right there. My friend said, oh my God, you'll love this picture. I said, no, it's silly. And she says, no, let me take this picture. So she took the picture. I altered it. I turned it into a painting and I put it on my business cards. And so there was a fellow who came up to me and he says to me, yo, bro, oh my God, oh, I have to take a picture. And I told him, we work on tips and donations. Is that okay? Oh, bro, I ain't got no money. I ain't got no money, bro. And I went, that's okay. That's perfectly fine. I will give you as many photos as you would like in exchange for your immortal soul. You have a deal. And he goes, so I can take a free picture? And I went, well, you could take as many pictures as you want. I'm not going to give you any money. I said, that's okay. I don't want your filthy lucre. I'm just going to use your soul, but don't worry. You're not using it anyway. It's going to cost you nothing. Don't you worry. Don't worry about it. So here, picture, and I hand him my business card with the image of me as the devil, and underneath it had entertainer, actor, celebrity impersonator, philanthropist, collector of souls. He came back a week later. He looked like he hadn't slept in 4 days. He had bags under his eyes. He was sweating. And he says to me, please, I've got to have my soul back. Please let me have my soul. And he takes $100 out of his pocket. And he says, please let me have my soul. Please let me have my soul. Please, please let me have my soul. And my friend who played Edward Scissorhands says, Willie, give him back his soul. And I went, but I was liking that one. Okay, all right, fine. Luxor, Noxor, burst and burn. Okay, there's your soul. You can have your soul. So he threw the $100 at me and ran away. And that was the easiest $100 I ever made in my life.
I think you should have held on to the soul for another week. You
know, right?
Just to see if you could have got him to cough up another $100.
At least.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And oh, my God. Maybe you and Courtney should go on the road together.
I'm in. Say less. I'm in.
It would be fabulous. We could be inept Satanists together.
You bring the filthy lucre and I'll bring the blood capsules and we'll just...
That sounds like a musical song. You bring the blood capsules, I'll bring the filthy lucre. You know,
we can do a whole musical. We can do we can hit Broadway with a new musical.
Yes,
yes. Time for Satan.
Spring. Right. All right. Not
I got a song for that. Go ahead.
Okay, not that we are off topic or anything, but Good Omens again, but this is the best. I'm just so much in love with all you guys and that much more. All right, good. I will go next because, again, I didn't know anything about it because I'm lame when it comes to television and was not expecting a lot on an Amazon series, though I know they're good. I, again, immediately fell in love with the characters and the relationship. And the two of them, Grey, Jon Hamm, being, this is so cute. Being somebody so different. Again, like you, Courtney, I am hooked. I can't wait till the next season. I can't wait to see it. The little scenes that are just funny, like when they thought was the devil was the angels in the bathtub asking for a rubber ducky. Anybody got rubber duckies in this hellhole? Yeah, they're fine. And you see the body sweat. So I just thought it was clever, intelligent, sweet, and funny. And the thing I like the best is that Richard Leal, I've never heard you so much like something that was so sweet. Using I love it, sweet, in the same sentence.
You know what? It's just, it's so feel good. Mm-hmm. And you can't help but feel for it. And Heather said, it toys with religion. It plays with it. God is narrated by a woman. God is a woman.
I love it.
When Aziraphale is trying to contact God, he obviously hasn't seen God in the flesh. And this voice comes and he says, I am the emissary of God. Yes, but you're not God. I want to talk to God. And then it turns out that God is a woman.
McDormand.
And then she says that when she's doing the narration, she says that the earth is 6,000 years old, which is, of course, it's a biblical thing. It's not. It's much older than that. But she says it was made on Sunday at precisely 2 o'clock p.m. or some.
I'm 13, yeah. Yeah, anyway. And she says she. I did this. That's when you cue into what they're talking about. Yeah. I think the show has what makes it fun also is that there are all these subtle cultural references, these pop cultural things that are dropped. He's talking when they get the drunk scene is so fun and the angel gets drunk. It's hysterical. And he whips around and he's holding Into the Woods, a musical program. And then he turns back around. And he's talking about The Sound of Music and these even more subtle ones. And I can't even remember them all because they're just dropping them here and there and which create that constant. It's almost like old school Hollywood repartee where the two of them are just back and forth. And I personally had a fun time watching it. I don't have a whole lot of time to watch series. I've never read Terry Pratchett. I was never a big Terry Pratchett fan reader. He's great. He's fantastic. It's just not one of the things I've done. But I really had a fun time with it. And I love watching David Tennant in that role. He is so good just to watch him act. And even some of the other ones, all of them, the acting is so fun to watch in and of itself that you kind of forget about the sidelines of the stories. You can just go, keep sitting there on that bench, keep talking for a whole hour. Let's just do that. How about it? It's just, that's what makes this so strong is the strength of the acting and the strength of those two characters, which I don't think you could have gotten without the strength of the two original authors.
Well, I think this show's really helped too, because Neil Gaiman wrote every episode. So you knew that it was something that he totally approved of and have had his voice really featured prominently which is really different from a show that came out a few years before, which was based on another Neil Gaiman work called American Gods, went on and on. It's a short book, and it should not have been a long-going TV series. It should have been like this, 6 episodes, which was just perfect. It tells the story. It provides a little bit more context. And as Heather said, it's not really the story that grabs you. It's the great performances in the TV show. It's all about Sheen and Tennant. And they just dominate every scene they're in. They're such a delight to watch. I really wanted was to watch the scenes that they're in. And the third episode, where the long open is just them going through time, is something that I will watch for amusement and enjoyment just to watch, because it's so well done and it's so much fun. And you can see that they really enjoy working together too, which makes it even better.
And Jason, I just have to jump in. I'm so glad you said that about American Gods, because I was so excited, and watching the first few episodes, even the first season, it was like, this is such a great concept. But then it just, and by the mid season two, I'm like, oh my goodness, how many more episodes are we going to have? And I think I didn't even finish. I think I dropped off at one point. I'm like, I'm done. It was this fantastic concept that just, like you said, just dragged on. I'm so happy to hear you say that. I wasn't the only one who was just, okay, snooze time.
And in this one, it tells the entire book, Good Omens, in 6 episodes. The entire book. That's why they didn't think that there was going to be a season 2 or 3, because it already told the whole story. But now in season 2, they focus more on the relationship of Aziraphale and Crowley. And then I don't know what they're doing for season 3, but again, it's delightful.
Yeah. Can I jump in real quick? Jason brought up the episode 3 that opened, the really long one. I was dying because every stupid thing that they're at, Crowley's like, this is your people? You're killing kids? Doesn't that feel wrong? And they're like, listen, they don't run anything past me. I'm just here to watch it happen. And it was like, oh, you're doing that? Your side is doing. Every time they did that, I squealed with glee. It was so hilarious. Like, I just love that they were like, oh, here's this thing, this big biblical thing. Oh, terrible. Like, the demon is horrified by it, which I thought was amazing.
I'm not sure that they're mean to religion, but I do think they point out the shortcomings of a lot of things, especially within Christianity. This is a religion of love, and then, oh, we're going to destroy the world. Or like the opening scene in the garden. Like, why would you do that? That doesn't make any sense. And I really enjoy how they play with religion in this. To me, the barbs at Christianity and the Bible are some of my favorite parts of the whole show.
I was raised Pentecostal, so I believed that the world was 6,000 years old, and I believed that there was an Armageddon, that there was an apocalypse, and I believed that God was murdering these people because they needed it, they deserved it. And now as an adult, as a humanist, I go, that's awful. That's horrible.
And I think what Tabitha just touched on, and just being human is what she just typed in the chat there, is something that just came into my head, is that you saw the negativity of both sides. They were at war, and there was one statement where they said, I think it was the angel that said it, why do we have to be at war? We have to be at war. We can't just avoid it. I think it was some of the other people in heaven said that we have to be at war. That's our point. We can't just avoid it. And so I think
victory is the reason.
Yeah, victory over the other is that war is the reason, and that it's not to avoid war, something like that, or to avoid the violence and stuff. And I think that was coming from heaven. And even though as disgusting as the hellscape was, that world to us, there was this negativity in heaven as well. And where was the positive point? If you look at this story, this narrative, where was the positive point? And that was on earth, in the humanity of the two characters. And that's who you love. And even though he is a demon, you should hate him. And even though he is an angel, he's not free from drinking wine with his buddy, not free from love, not free from wanting to be human. So I think what Tabitha pointed out, is that the point of this is that these things up there are chaotic, are painful, there's problems, they're not perfect, but the real point of the real goodness is between our, in our humanity, and even in the humanity of a demon and a humanity of an angel, and the relationship they have and the love and care of coming together. So I think that's where the beauty comes in this one. You know, that's where the good is. The good.
And Crowley's just super cool. He's like the coolest dude, maybe in the history of television shows.
David Tennant.
Yeah. May I remind you that he drives a classic car, listens to the music Queen, and dresses in black. I'm just going to leave it right there.
And has ever-changing hairstyles, facial hair.
And some really wonderful old glasses that he wears at several points.
It has some familiar
eyes.
And his Mr. Satan is not, his Mr. Satan is not a Jaguar, but a Bentley. But I'll take it. It's fine. I'll take my Jaguar. It's fine. My Jaguar. It's not a real Jaguar.
It's Mr. Satan. All right. Who hasn't spoken yet? Anybody hasn't?
We need
I think we need some quotes. I think we need some quotes.
Then we're going to have to get the Jason's minute too.
The quotes are better.
I didn't do a great job. I was furiously typing quotes as I was enjoying the show, and I was very much wrapped up. But these are more paraphrases in some spots than quotes. I did the best I could. But when he said, then, welcome to the end times, I was like, yep, here we go. And I want that on a t-shirt. Then they said, I think it was God, the narrator, said, most books on witchcraft will tell you that witches work naked. That's because most books on witchcraft are written by men. And then he was asking him if he was still a demon, and he said, what kind of stupid question is that, still a demon? What else would I be, an aardvark? And then when it was like when they were doing the, I think it was episode 3, when they were in the church with the Nazis, and he was coming into the church, and he was like, ooh, ah, ooh, oh, like he couldn't step on the floor, and he's like, sorry, consecrated ground. It's like walking on the beach in bare feet, and he was like, still, like, I was like, that's me at church. That's a bit. And then when it was the witch hunter was preparing the other witch hunter to go find the witch, and he's like giving him all the tools, and he's like, you need this pin, and you need this, and you need this bell, and you need this book, and you need this candle. And he's like, that was great. So those are my quotes. Well then, welcome to the end times.
Exactly. Thank you. All right. And Jason, the Jason Monkey Minute.
All right. This was tough because I really liked this show. I love this show, so it's hard to make fun of something that you like. You were bored to tears by the plotting and never-ending American Gods TV show, and most of you seem to have forgotten Stardust was an actual movie that was shown in theaters. I guess Hogfather was okay, but that and the other Discworld movies lacked budgets over $75. But now, after years of waiting, here's an adaptation of Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett's work that won't leave you disappointed. With apologies to Coraline, which is terrific. There's a lot that happens over the 6 hours of Good Omens, but all that truly matters is Aziraphel and Crowley, along with Gaiman and Pratchett's not-so-subtle jabs at Christianity and the preposterous idea that a loving God would destroy the world. Things are summed up quickly near the show's beginning. Not very subtle of the Almighty, though. Fruit tree in the middle of a garden with a don't touch sign. Why not put it on top of a high mountain or on the moon? Yeah, this show is bloody awesome, but even more awesome is the chemistry between David Tennant's Crowley and Michael Sheen's Aziraphel. They command the screen every time that they are together, with the demonic Crowley most often the voice of reason. You can't drown kids! There's stuff in this show about witch prophecies and the Antichrist, but the real question you'll be asking yourself is, when are these two going to kiss? Like, really? The chemistry between Tennant and Sheen is off the hook. Just get it on already. I'm not worried about the end of the world here. I'm worried about an angel and a demon taking the next inevitable step in their relationship.
Yes!
That's amazing.
That is beautiful. Thank you. All right. I guess for those of you out there who've seen it or want to judge by this, our next step is actually one's up or one's down. Let's vote. Omen.
Good omens.
Omens are very good.
Richard Lales is so high you can't even see it.
It's up there.
Wow. That's like Killing Tree level compliments right
now. Wow. Oh. Okay, this honestly is one of the rare times we have been unanimous. So what about you guys? Anybody out there who's seen it or wants to vote on just what we say? We got an aloha. I'm going to say that's wands up. We got a wands up and wands up, Mary Jane. Wands up from Haley. Wands up, wand way the hell up from Tabitha. Wands up. So I'll look at all these new converts we'll have for the new series when it comes out.
There is no way though, Courtney, that you can compare Good Omens to The Killing Tree. That is just completely wrong, and I will not have you sully Richard Lynn's birthday celebration by making such a comparison.
Turn your light off right now. I will compare everything to The Killing Tree. Because that's all I've, thank you, that's all I've talked about since I've watched it several times, okay?
And for everybody in our chat room, Courtney is not lying. It is literally everything she's talked about since we watched The Killing Tree. And we're now 2 weeks out, so. Yep.
We have a text chain, it's just Killing Tree, Killing Tree.
What about The Killing Tree? What is Clayton?
I wish you a merry Killing
what
Tree.
What would Clayton do? You need
if
that.
If I may, Heather Green is my idol, my... obviously the person that made The Killing Tree is my biggest idol, but then just underneath is Heather, who made Clayton the actual Killing Tree, and I've never been so delighted by something in my entire life than I went when I got that picture.
Yes,
I regret a few things in this life, but I do regret introducing Courtney Buckley to The Killing Tree.
Why would you regret something that made me just so happy and filled with joy? I had a great Christmas. The Killing Tree.
But is this forward movement in your life, Courtney?
Yes. I feel joy. I feel things. One of them is joy.
Okay. Is the perhaps the reason that you're scared and alone right now is because you are worried about a Christmas tree attacking you here at the end of the holiday season?
Is there a Christmas tree in your house?
There is a Christmas tree in this house right now.
Is it fake?
It is not wearing boots, and it does not have access to a map.
But can it drive a car?
Mine did.
It probably could drive a car.
I've actually forgotten if we've decided. What are we watching next week?
It's my birthday week, and I desperately want to watch Anchorman. But the consensus is it doesn't work for our show because there are no witches in it. However, I would argue... the fact that Ron Burgundy ends up with Christina Applegate is magic. That is complete magic. However, if I cannot have my choice, I will go with Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Okay.
That's easy. I probably won't get yelled at by my wife for watching that. Probably. We'll see.
Are you sure you don't want to be married?
We'll see how this goes. We could not watch The Killing Tree again, Courtney.
No.
You can't. Anytime.
I already have.
Courtney, watch my wand. You will forget about The Killing Tree.
No, thank you.
You will forget about The Killing Tree.
Impossible.
I tried.
Anyway, okay. So next week, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. That's good. I've not watched that in a while. That will be a fun one. Does anybody have any other questions? Way up. It's almost unanimous. I wasn't sure if Robert was meant down or sown. Robert Hicks. So we don't know how to read your ones up or ones down. Typo on.
Lord Morgan Richards also wasn't a fan.
Too much Bible, he said.
And sorry, too much Bible in it. Okay, all right. So almost unanimous. But not quite. Next week, Monty Python, Holy Grail. Does anybody have anything? What do we have? We have New Year's coming up. And we're still coming off this amazing full moon, a cold moon yesterday. So still very magical. Anybody want any nice wishes for the new year or rituals? Or
it's my birthday, so raise a glass for me. New Year's Eve is my birthday on the day. I was born at 4:32 in the afternoon. Which it was nice because I could come out and party, and then the world would be closed and hungover on the first. And everywhere I go, there's a party, and they say it's your party. And now as an adult, I don't go anywhere, so it's a party of one, which is kind of fun.
Is there an online birthday party for you this year?
There might be. We'll keep you posted. There might be a happy birthday celebration on New Year's Eve. Our producer said that there were some personal things that may inhibit it, but If there is, then you are all invited to my birthday. And if not, I'll go live anyway and say hello, and then I'll go off and watch The Killing Tree.
I would like to address Tabitha said, what are your hopes for the new year? And I'd love to hear what everyone's hopes for the new year is. And then I'd love to share mine also.
Share yours first.
Oh, mine is for The Killing Tree too.
My wish is to never again hear about The Killing Tree on this show. That's my right. That's
and
my
Jason's wish cancels Courtney's wish.
Yeah.
Cool.
Just like the angel and the demon.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to be too much of a peacenik. I'm just really tired of war on TV and in real life. I just want everybody just get along? I just want to go there. Really. I don't care about everything else.
Send me an angel. That's what I want for the new year.
Oh, yeah. Richard Leo. I wish for you to get an angel like that.
That's really what I want.
Yeah. Me too. I'll wish for that too.
Send me an angel.
Okay, everybody, on the count of three, wish Richard Leo an angel. And on that note, it is, do we cackle or what do we do after this movie?
Oh, we can cackle. Demons and angels can cackle.
Demons cackle.
Okay. Goodbye, everybody. See you next year. 1, 2, 3. Yeah.